Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Transportation Finance and Policy Division for this Friday morning, the 23rd of May. We will continue our walkthrough of the special session bill. And this bill is a result of conference committee deliberations that took place last week and the budget target that was agreed by the governor, Senate Majority Leader, and House Speaker. And we as well agreed to that figure in, wasn't really a conference committee at that time, but conversations between the House and the Senate. So that's the bill in terms of its process. We went through the budget spreadsheets yesterday, and there are a couple of small adjustments since yesterday that were made, and I will what we'll do this morning is have Mr. Lee go over those budget adjustments, and then we'll have a walkthrough of the entire policy provisions of the bill and by Mr. Burris, and then we have several folks that have signed up for public testimony, and we'll take that public testimony. So that is the agenda for the day. I know we have a number of members on our side that have conflicts with other committees and other activities, but as members come in, we'll welcome them, and hopefully we'll be have some good attendance and good questions.
Any idea how long we'll be gathered today?
I don't anticipate much longer than an hour, but that depends on, you know, the amount of questions and clarifications that members are interested
and
in.
And any word on when we might be having special session?
I do not know that. I know it's not today, and but beyond that, I don't know.
And so when we finish our hearing today, this is the end of our work until I see you on the floor?
It should be, you know, unless something very unusual comes up. So this is a good, this will be really the best opportunity to go through the bill and ask questions. So, again, and we don't have any constraints here at this committee in this room, so, you know, I'm prepared to stay as long as members would like to and the public would like to in terms of vetting this bill. So with that, Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and members, going back to the spreadsheet that was handed out yesterday, I have a few rather minor corrections. The first on page 2, line 64, the active transportation federal fund statutory line. In conferring with my Senate colleague, there's some changes in the language particular to that, those funds. And so those funds are still will be used for active transportation purposes, they'll be tracked slightly differently in a forthcoming spreadsheet. And then a correction to one item in the State Patrol on page 8. Line 370. In committee yesterday, I had thought that that increase was an error, but that increase is actually in the draft language. So that's a $103,000 increase in the biennium for the vehicle crimes unit from the HUTD. And then the final item is in the revenue item, so that's on page 11. Line 521, the license and fee changes. I have some updated estimates for those that will be in a forthcoming spreadsheet, and we'll break down the increases between. Between a number of different. Plate fee increases, which over the biennium would generate about $5.1 million for DVS, and then about $8.1 million from driver's license fee increases over the biennium, and then the filing fee increase that is just retained on the state side would generate about $4.33 million and that part of that fee would also be retained by the deputy registrars. I'll be sending a fiscal note request to the agency with the newly drafted language to get an official estimate on deputy registrar amounts. And I could probably work on some estimates while we're in committee here. So those were the items.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lee. Are there any questions on these additions to our budget conversation from yesterday? Great. Before I introduce Mr. Burris, I just wanted to thank Representative Cagle and Representative Torkelson for their participation in the conference committee and some of the subsequent conversations that took place after that. We also had wonderful participation from this committee. Representative Richardson, who's in pension committee now, also participated. And Representative Tabke, who is traveling, unfortunately, to a funeral today and can't make this meeting. But he was an active participant as well. Now, we had a lot of discussion in the conference committee. We met just about every day that was available to us. We had many more House provisions than Senate provisions. A number of those were adopted, a number of those that were important to members on both sides of the aisle we fought for. I'm disappointed, of course, that a number of what I consider to be very important House provisions are not in this bill. A lot of those relate to climate and equity issues. Of course, we don't have any of the provisions related to the driver's license for all. That's a very big disappointment, as well as some of the rail safety concerns that we had brought up. We'll be coming back next year with, I think, a broader package on rail safety, but those were some disappointments. By and large, many of the House provisions that members were concerned about did make it into the bill, and Mr. Burris will go through those in more detail. With that, Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I did have one more fiscal question before.
Absolutely.
Mr. Burris, and that has to do with the contingency spending. I see in the language of the bill that there's a second contingency for the emergency fund. Could you just kind of explain that for us, Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair, and Representative Torkelson, the language that you're looking at for contingency funds is on page 20, starting on line 20.23. So you'll see that if the fiscal year 2019 closing balance in the general fund exceeds the projected end for the 2019 session, by at least $33 million, then $20 million would go to the disaster contingency account, and $13 million would be appropriated in fiscal 2021 for the Metropolitan Council for Metro Mobility. And then the language below that specifies a split if the balance is less than $33 million. So it proportionally kind of scales between those two uses between the disaster agency and Metro Mobility. So that's where that language is located.
Representative Horkelson.
Chair, thank you, Mr. Lee. So as far as you know, those are the only two contingencies in the broader scope of legislation this year, or is there a possibility there are others hiding in other bills?
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, I had understood that there was a there's another contingency actually in section 12, just below that, that relates to cancellations and reappropriations. That's not so much a contingent on extra revenue in the close of fiscal 19. It's sort of if money that was already expected to be spent isn't spent, it is appropriated into the next fiscal year. But particular to the sort of contingency that's in section 11, I had heard, I think, that there was an education piece, but I'll look into that and get back to the committee, and maybe Mr. Burris might have a little bit more knowledge on that.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, members, I don't have further information on that at this point, but we can get back to everyone about what else is identified in other budget bill drafts.
Well, thank you for that. So if there's more than one of these, how does the trigger work at that point? Do they add together somehow, or does one take precedence over another?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, we would need to take a look at the language to say for sure. What I had heard as indications is that this language would take precedence, and so the threshold would be over and above this initial $33 million for other contingent appropriations. But again, that's just based on my preliminary understanding, and we need to take a look at the specifics of the language.
Representative Torkel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Burris. And what I didn't understand yesterday, that there will be an allocation, even if the excess is under $33 million, there will be a proportional allocation to these two funds based on the proportion that they are at $33 million. Is that correct?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and members, yes, that's correct. And you can see the language of the apportion starting on line 21.9 for the disaster assistance contingency account, and on 21.12 for Metro Mobility.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Elkins, and then we'll move on to the walkthrough.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, is the intention to get questions about fiscal matters out of the way here first before we launch into the bill? Then.
Yeah, I mean, I'm flexible on all questions, but since we did the fiscal walkthrough yesterday, I think if we could get those questions out of the way now, then we can go straight into the policy. So if you have a fiscal question.
Two questions. One related to, and we had a little sidebar here a second ago, but I think you should have a discussion on the record, is that
sure.
The deputy registrars, I think, amply justified a $2.50 increase to the registration fees. And it looks like there's only a dollar in there. Can any background on that happen? Did the Senate insist on it only being a dollar?
Mr. Lee. Or Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Elkins, part of one of the Senate's proposals was the filing fee language that you see here just on the vehicle side of a $1 increase going into the House File 1555 Conference Committee. You'll recall the House position was a higher increase on both these motor vehicle transactions as well as driver's license transactions, and this is reflective of what the Senate response was at one point in the negotiations.
Representative Elkins.
I think Representative Torkelson would like to respond to this one.
Is Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. First off, the amount is very disappointing. We know from testimony how much more work deputy registrars have been required to do and will be required to do as we move into the future. Second, while we had extensive conference committee meetings, as you noted earlier, Mr. Chair, we never got to fiscal issues. We never, as a conference committee, had a chance to address the fiscal issues that are in this bill. We never had a chance to advocate for, in this case, a House position of a higher fee increase for deputy registrars. And finally, the fee increase that's in here is really coming from the, I don't know what to call it anymore, but I can't pronounce it, but the end of Old Minlars and the beginning of something else.
Right.
And none of that got a proper hearing where we had a chance to really discuss in detail or hear from the deputy registrars in regards to the impact of the Minlar's replacement bill on their work. I see this as a failure of process that we just really didn't have a chance to work through the details of those issues and advocate for what I think is a very important position of the deputy registrars to get a reasonable amount of reimbursement for the work that they're forced to do by the state of Minnesota through the changes we've made in their requirements.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson.
I've still got
We have Representative Elkins and then Representative Joachim with the fiscal question
as
well.
First of all, to conclude Representative Torkelson's comment, I agree entirely, but for my part, I know that I had like one or two fiscal items and about six policy items, and sat here all day on Sunday, coming to be prepared to sit in that chair and defend those items. And, you know, yesterday when we were going through the spreadsheet, I was stunned. Today I'm kind of pissed. You know, most of you have observed that I generally have a pretty level demeanor in this committee. But for example, the one that really has me more pissed than anything else is that for the last 4 years, a Republican legislature has funded the 494 corridors commission's operations at $150,000 a year. And now, as MnDOT is finalizing the design work for the 494-35W interchange and the additional MnPass lane on 494, we cut their budget by $150,000 a year, just as we're poised for chaos in that corridor. I should have had an opportunity to defend that proposal, and none of us had an opportunity really to defend most of the proposals that we had included in the House omnibus bill. And I understand it's because, you know, basically Senator Newman decided that when he had the gavel on Sunday and Monday, he just wasn't going to hold a hearing, but it's not right.
Duly noted. Representative Yoakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just want to apologize for not being able to be here yesterday. I was in on the Education Conference Committee and sharing some of the same frustrations I hear that this conference committee shared with the Senate slow-walking things, so that we were actually hearing in education that we couldn't talk about policy until budget was finished. So we finally forced the issue by having a conference committee almost every day when we had the gavel, almost every day when they did, to kind of continually dig away to try to get policy. So I have to say, Mr. Chair, I'm very impressed that you have as much policy in your bill. You were much more successful than we were in education to have those conversations. I share the frustration, and I would have said this yesterday and I'll move on, but this really is a lights on bill. This is where Minnesota loses, because people refuse to talk about revenue and investment. So I will just leave it at that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. Representative Bernardi.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a badge problem this morning, so I went home to try to get it and couldn't find it.
And you have a question about a fiscal?
Yeah, she was mentioning about policy. Can I mention about policy?
Sure. I mean,
or not. We're, that's okay. I can wait.
Here, currently is we had a fairly extensive conversation about fiscal matters yesterday, and we had a couple of additional items that Mr. Lee brought before us, and we're just trying to wrap up a conversation about the fiscal aspects of the bill, and then Mr. Burris is going to walk through the policy issue.
So Mr. Chair, I can wait until we do that. It won't be in there, but I'll comment after that.
Good. Representative Torkelson. Well,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I am going to make this response every time I hear the term lights on. The lights in this bill are much brighter because of the work we did in 2017. Our budget grew 17% from 16 to 17, the largest jump in transportation spending in the last, I believe, 12 or 14 years. If we hadn't done that, this bill has a moderate increase of 4%. But that jump in 17 means that this lights on bill is much brighter than it would otherwise be.
Well, we can get into a conversation about that perhaps after the policy conversation here. But maybe it would be accurate to call this a status quo transportation bill in a moment when we need it. Significant change in investment. Okay,
Mr. Chair, just a word of explanation. That does not include the bonding. It's just general fund.
Okay, let's. Okay, Representative Joachim.
Mr. Chair,
you need to get.
I understand, Mr. Chair, but I feel that was completely directed at me, although my name was not used. It definitely is a lights on bill when it comes to transit. And the investments last year was met at our debt capacity. It was also hurt our general fund. So it's a different philosophical discussion we can have later. I don't want to distract from the really good work the conference committee tried to do with a very miserable target. But I would like to move on to policy if Mr. Chair is ready for that.
I would concur with you, Representative Joachim, certainly on the transit side. We could have done a lot better. Okay, Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, members, there should be two documents in your packet. First, I'll note there's a transportation omnibus provision status sheet, and that is laid out in the landscape format. This is reflective of the working activity of the House File 1555 Conference Committee. So it doesn't identify section numbers in the bill draft that was produced for the agreement. Instead, it's with reference to the original House File 1555 sections and revised page numbers from the side-by-side, just to let you aware. So this is a preliminary document, primarily working through the policy and finance article. So there are a couple of things that aren't mentioned in this document and were already noted earlier in the hearing today. The first is on driver's license eligibility. That was House File 1500 in its more or less in its entirety in the one of the articles of the House position. So that was not included in the it's not in the document. It's not in the reviser bill draft. The second thing is trunk highway bonding. That, again, was a House-only position. There's no trunk highway bonding in the reviser bill draft. The other document is the reviser bill draft. It is an ID at the upper right of 19-5225. So this is not yet a House file because we're not in special session, but this would be the working document for potential introduction. So, Mr. Chair and members, with that, I'll move through some of the provisions that are in the draft, as well as some highlights around differences between House and Senate positions and how that came out, and provisions included on particularly focusing on the Senate side and House positions that were excluded. Flipping back to this reference provision status sheet, that is categorized in a couple of ways. So again, from the perspective of what had been the conference committee, there are categories of same and similars with a number of policy differences among some of the provisions, and then House-only language, Senate-only language, and some additional provisions that were ultimately included in the reviser bill draft. And then within each of those, there's further categorization between items that had been adopted in the conference committee and then other items that ultimately were included as part of the final negotiations and agreements. Moving into same and similars, there were a number of things that were either identical or very similar between House and Senate, and this ranged from memorial highways and bridges to some provisions around decommissioned military vehicles, railroad on-track equipment, school bus, rub rail colors, window tinting. Generally, those were identical between House and Senate. And the provision status document doesn't highlight all of the technical differences, but there were some amendments and modifications made in conference committee. So one of the things I'll touch on are some of those changes. The first of those, moving into the sections, is found on in Article 3, Section 66. And I'm sorry, I don't have page numbers, so I'll be kind of flipping to those pages as we go. This is found on page 97. And this is a modification to the special, what was called the special paper products vehicle permits. This is one of the special permits for overweight vehicles. Both House and Senate had this provision. Ultimately, what's included in the reviser bill draft is a specification of particular paper products. And both House and Senate had the expansion of where vehicles could operate under the special permit. And the House language had kept that expansion of operating range to just paper product special permits. The conference committee, the reviser bill draft also provides that expansion for another permit that's included in the same section on oversized tires. Sections 67 to 69, as well as a technical change in section 139, are another point of policy difference between House and Senate, and something of a merger. The key piece here is this is on a special permit for qualifying ag products. Both House and Senate had a definition to specify those products. The Senate had a larger definition. Ultimately, what was adopted was the somewhat narrower House definition. You'll find this on page 100, section 68. And an amendment was brought in included to also add livestock manure, which is on page 100, line 22.
Mr. Burris, Representative Kosnick has a...
Mr. Chair, Mr. Burris, for us to follow along, are you going over this system just so we can kind of, or you, is there a list that you're kind of going through the provisions so I can track a little better?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kosnick, I was going to be going through this list but talking about the reviser bill draft language. So I don't know if that's helpful to you. I can identify line numbers off of the list. Of the provision
Mr.
status.
Are we going chronologically, or you're going through the bill chronologically and then it's jumping around on here?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kosnick, I'm going to go through the provision status list in order.
Okay.
And perhaps just line and page numbers would be
helpful.
The best way to follow along, I think.
Okay.
Mr.
Appreciate
Burris.
It. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, sorry for generating any confusion. I'm sort of jumping between two different documents on this.
Understood.
Hopefully is an informative approach once we get used to it. That wraps up line 14. Line 15 is another one that is on third-party testing for school bus operators. That's one of the ones that was the same between House and Senate. Line 16, air transportation service charges, this was a provision that was included between both House and Senate, is now is reflective of something of a merger between the House and Senate language. That's found on page 113. So there is, well, I'll just move from there to line 17. One thing that's not noted in the sheet passed out is that there was a modification to this in the reviser's document. And this is setting a floor. There's a floor for 2 years that's set in current law for the regionally allocated portion of the motor vehicle sales tax funds that the Met Council is directed, it sets a minimum for what the Met Council is directed to provide to suburban transit providers. The reviser document bill draft extends that floor for 2 years. The House position originally had been an indefinite establishment of that floor. And there is a correction to note on line 18. There are two provisions that are identified here. There's actually only one that's included in the reviser document. And it's also highlighted accurately later in this provision status. So the provision that's included is on facilitated discussions among between Calhoun Isles Association and the Metropolitan Council as regards to the Southwest Light Rail Transit Line. And the other provision is on a vibration impact study that's not included in the revisor document.
Representative Elkin?
Yeah, so if we're trying to follow along in the spreadsheet, where in the bill do we find these two discussed, 17 and 18?
On, let's see, 17 is found on page 132, and it's section 113. And I apologize, this is a preliminary, this status list is a preliminary working document, and I'll be putting together one that identifies the section numbers of the bill when it's introduced.
We'll have Mr. Burris finish answering Representative Elkin's question, and we'll get to you, Representative Petersburg. Mr. Burris.
And then the other, the Southwest Light Rail Transit discussion, facilitated discussions provision, is located near the back of the bill, and that is found, once I find it, on page 137. It's section 122.
Are you, does that help, Representative Elkin?
Thank you, yes.
Okay, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. Just for clarification for those that are trying to follow along, my understanding is on your provision status, the first three columns are in reference to the working documents that you're using in conference committee and have not, really don't compare directly with the bill in front of us. Is that correct?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, yes. Yes, that's what I was trying to note
right,
earlier.
Right, and so you'll be getting an updated version, which that will line up later.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Corkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So in relation to Southwest Light Rail, there was also a provision about public meetings. Is that in addition to this Calhoun Isles language?
Yes.
I can't even say the old name.
I actually,
nothing about the new one.
I can answer that, Mr. Representative Corkelson. Yes, that's correct. So basically, the provisions are mediation between the association, the Met Council, and then these safety meetings during construction. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, members, the next one that I'll move to is on page, well, at the very bottom of page one. I'll highlight some additional provisions that had been touched on at points in the conference committee but hadn't been formally adopted. But that's kind of this next grouping. So page two, top of page two, line 21, is one of some of a series of provisions that the auto dealers had brought forth, and this would allow for auto dealers to establish the registration tax on the basis of the MSRP of the vehicle.
Representative Elkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in the end, we ended up adopting just about all of the changes that the auto dealers had requested, except one, and that was the late fee exception. Can you talk to why that one wasn't included?
Mr. Burris? I mean, I know that the Senate did not want that, and we're pretty vehement about it, but I don't know if there were some additional discussions, Mr. Burris, about that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Elkins, I'm not sure that I could speak any further to rationale. That, I guess that would be a question for the members.
Yeah. I mean, it was one they didn't want. What can I tell you? Okay. And I will say, Representative Elkins, that it was a process to get these other ones included as well. Process. Okay. You can continue, Mr. Bruce.
Mr. Chair, members, so this provision is found on page 70 and it's section 19 in the bill draft. One change from the original House position is that this has an expiration, so it would go into effect July 1, 2019, and then expire at the end of fiscal year 2022. Another provision that is modified somewhat between what was in both House and Senate language was a requirement around electronic transactions, so that third parties would be able to perform registration and titling. And the modification here was to delay the effective date to be in conjunction with full implementation of the new, of the replacement vehicle information system. Another highlight on House and Senate is on vehicle platooning. This is a series of sections. Both the House and Senate had authorization for platooning and some differences in policy that largely centered around plan approval. And the language in the bill draft is reflective of some of the kind of a merger of technical differences and the more or less the Senate's approach on specificity of plan approvals. Another highlight on differences between, or another kind of policy differences provision on expansion of metro mobility service area. The House had an expansion to Lakeville. The Senate had expansion to a number of other communities. This is found on page 131, if you were referencing back to the bill draft. It's section 112. Ultimately, what's in this bill draft is the expansion just to Lakeville. So that was the House position.
Representative Corbettson, did you have a question?
Yes. So all this last group of vehicle dealer provisions that we've just gone over, are all of those new as of after conference committee, so to speak, that they were adopted in the negotiations between Representative Hornstein and Senator Newman, or is there a mixture of the ones we adopted in conference and others?
Representative Wilkinson, I think it is a mixture, but Mr. Brisk can maybe identify what was conference committee and what was later.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, it is a mixture, and if you are working through the provision status, again, I'm sorry, I don't have the section numbers to where it is in the bill draft, but line 5 of the provision status sheet identifies the auto dealer provisions that were adopted in conference.
Okay. Thank you.
And then you'll see at the top page two the others. Next, Mr. Chair and members, there were a series of provisions that were included in both House and Senate, but there were policy differences. Ultimately, neither version is included in the reviser bill draft. The first of these is on disability parking that impacts bikeways. House and Senate had differences on specificity or the nature of how firm that requirement is. There was a set of differences, a number of policy differences around automated vehicle testing. Similarly, some differences in a campus zone pass program. And then a couple of auto dealer related provisions were touched on earlier. One of these is listed and found on line 31 of the provision status sheet. And that is tied but not included to the Minlar's replacement provisions that are found in Article 2 of the reviser bill draft. There are a couple of proposals that were separately enacted already in 2019 with parallel language, so those aren't included in the revised bill draft. That's on work zone flaggers as well as moving over for additional authorized vehicles. And then there's one other vehicle dealer provision on temporary permits that's not included. Moving then to the house-only language.
Representative Perkelson.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, but to going back to the automated vehicle testing, I recall the Senate had attempted to have a provision that would restrict testing to non-public streets or something like that. Is that – I don't remember what happened to that. I just hope it's not in here.
It is not. Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson. Well, the chair had it. It's not in here.
And on that, Representative Torkelson, we received, you know, and again, Representative Elkins was a champion on this whole set of issues, and, you know, we really felt strongly that the House provisions were, you know, more thoughtful and moved us in the better direction. And the advice we got from experts was that without the House provisions, which the Senate would not take, it was better to, you know, hold here for a year and see if we can come up with something better next year. And that's really what ended up happening. Representative Elkins, am I accurate in that?
The all of the stakeholder groups were unanimous that they wanted the House language that we developed, or were better off waiting a year.
And Representative Elkins has been a great, spent a lot of time on this, and has been a good good advocate and help in this regard. And you know, this is an area that we will have to deal with, but I think we need to deal with it in a thoughtful and deliberative way. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, then the next category is House-only provisions. A number of those have been discussed in committee and as House File 1555 moved through the process and on the House floor. So I will move sort of through, just highlight that those are starting at the bottom of page 2 and extending on to page 3, kind of covering a wide variety of policy and finance areas. If there are questions on any of the specifics, I could certainly take those up. Some were adopted in committee, and a couple were added over the course of negotiations. So the adoptions from the conference committee start on line 39, run through line 55, and then the other inclusions are identified on lines 57 and 58. Below that, there's a series of House-only sections that are not included. A number of these were kind of touched on at a high level already, and this involves the core of the House financing package, so motor fuels tax, registration tax, raising the rate on the motor vehicle sales tax, reallocating motor vehicle lease sales tax revenue, eliminating some of the state general sales taxes that are currently allocated to transportation, as well as motor vehicle sales tax formula adjustments. So that's the Article 3 provisions, starting on line 60, running through line 67. That's followed by a number of other House-only provisions that are not included in the reviser bill draft. The first of those is on transportation goals and energy conservation. There's also a MnDOT environment and climate reporting requirement that's not included. There are several regulatory changes on bicycles that are not included. And that's driving rules for motorists as well as for bicyclists, and centralizing definitions and updates to operation on shoulder. MnDOT planning assistance direction to local governments and the establishment of the Jim Oberstar bicycle route are out of the – or not in the bill draft. Extension and modifications to an advisory committee on active transportation, currently called non-motorized transportation, is not included. There's a provision on authorizing MnDOT to provide a preference for contract work near or on Indian reservations, and that's not included, as well as utility location relocation requirement provisions. There's a series of special plates. None of those are in the bill draft. I'm at now at line 76. This was touched on earlier. This was sort of part of a proposal on deputy registrar funding. This is not included. Would allow for expedited title issuance fee to be retained by deputy registrars at an adjusted rate. There are a number of sections around preventing situations where a driver's license would be suspended or resuspended, and some associated data and reporting requirements. Those are not in the bill draft. MnDOT is directed under a provision to establish prioritization and weighting factors in its project development process. That's not included. There were some modifications to the state rail safety inspection program on the number of inspectors and uses of the funds. That is out along with the minimum train crew size. There were some agency proposal changes on the grade crossing safety accounts that would reallocate a higher proportion of fine revenue and allow for use of administrative costs out of the account. Those were excluded. The Department of Transportation also had some regulatory proposals around reducing the aircraft registration tax, foregoing registration requirements for some unmanned aircraft, modifying liability requirements and defining terms. That's not included. The House provision proposed a modification on the requirements for electric vehicle infrastructure, narrowing that down to have those requirements just apply to state-owned instead of all electric vehicle charging stations. That was not included. There's also a directive to the Metropolitan Council on deploying buses based on emissions impacts of those buses. There's a freight rail liability limits provision that currently only applies to the Southwest project that would be extended to Bottineau. That's another provision that was that's not included in the bill draft. And then there are a couple of legislative reports on traffic stops and MnDOT's transportation information reporting that it's excluded. Also excluded is a mileage-based user fee pilot program, as well as the repeal of the ban on the Dan Patch corridor commuter rail development. So that ban would be unchanged under the bill draft. With that, Mr. Chair and members, the next area involves Senate-only provisions, and there were some Senate language that's now included in the bill draft. This is found starting on line 94 of the status sheet. There are some memorial highways and bridges. A couple of these have been proposed in legislation last year, and also had moved in, if I recall correctly, I believe it had moved in a policy only bill in the House. The next one is found on line 95, and would direct MnDOT and the Department of Public Safety to provide a report on an ongoing basis on dedicated fund expenditures. So these would be expenditures out of the Trunk Highway Fund and the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. Line 96 is a requirement that the Department of Public Safety allocate and report on the funds, the donation funds received for a special plate. So it sets a timeline on getting those funds distributed. Line 37, it was a, sorry, line 97 was a provision that had a couple of rounds of discussion in the conference committee, so maybe I'll touch on that with a little bit more detail. This is found in sections 39 and 131 if you wanted to move over to the bill draft language. The main language is in section 39. This provision is a traffic regulation change and is a modification from what the House, or sorry, what the Senate had originally proposed. So what's in the bill draft would revise the current law requirements around moving to a right-hand lane when the driver of a vehicle is going slower than the normal speed of traffic. And the modification is to add some specificity around both moving as close as you can to the right-hand curb or edge on two-lane roads when going significantly slower than traffic so as to create a hazard, as well as set requirements a little bit more clearly on moving over to allow other vehicles to pass when there are multiple lanes in the same direction of travel. So that's section 39, and there's a corresponding provision on an education campaign around this change.
Representative Bernardi.
Can you just tell me how it affects, if there's speed limit signs, like minimum speed limit, would it be somebody that could be going above the minimum speed limit? They still need to pull over, and how does this affect any kind of bike lane that's close to the shoulder?
That is a more of a technical question. I'm trying to ascertain whether we should hold that. Colonel Langer is here. He worked on this provision. I think what we'll do is have Mr. Burris go through the rest of the walkthrough, and then when we'll return to that, and I think members may have questions that agencies and other folks in the audience can answer. So why don't we do that? The first one we'll do is that one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And then I'm sure, again, we had the situation yesterday, we had a number of member questions, and we had agencies and others come and answer those. So we'll note that, Representative Bernardi, and then we'll have Colonel Langer come and.
Thank you.
And I think not only that your question, but, this was a we had extensive discussion about this in the conference committee, and other members may have an interest as well. So,
thank you.
Proceed, Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, I would note that the Senate's position included a speed limit increase on when passing on two-lane roads, or sorry, on roads where there's more than one lane in the same direction. That's not included in this bill draft language. The next of the Senate-only provisions is found in on line 98 of the provisions list, and this concerns speed limits. This is actually language that the Transportation Committee had heard and had passed in substantially the same, sort of substantially similar form in a standalone bill. And this provides authority for cities to adjust their local speed limits, and it sets some requirements around setting that rather than it being based on an engineering and traffic investigation by the Department of Transportation. I might note there's also a House-only provision that I had not gone into detail about earlier on residential roadways and broadening that definition. So. The conference committee had considered the interaction and ultimately adopted both provisions. That kind of there's some overlapping aspects, but both would provide authority in somewhat different ways around local speed limit setting.
Wow.
Line 100 provides authority, or clarifies, I guess I should say, the driving rules for larger vehicles as they move through roundabouts. And that was a Senate provision. And then line 100 establishes an annual report that would be produced by the Department of Public Safety regarding the Vehicle Crimes Unit. There was a series of sections on airport zoning that were Senate-only language in the conference committee, but it was also contained in a House bill that reflected some of the policy provisions from the 2018 supplemental omnibus. So essentially the Senate had brought in a number of sections, including all of these relating to airport zoning, into their budget bill. That's included in the revisor bill draft. And then there are two provisions on on Jake braking, engine braking, that would allow Burnsville and Minneapolis in specified locations to ban the use of that type of braking. And then finally, there's elimination of a sunset for the Mississippi River Parkway Commission. So that's one of the provisions in the repealer section. The next category of Senate-only are other provisions that have been included or are included in the bill draft under the agreement. The first of those is two provisions on audits of the Department of Public Safety and Department of Transportation. This is both of these are directives to the Office of the Legislative Auditor when resources permit to perform these audits. And then Mr. Lee had touched on the active transportation funding. So this is actually in Article 1 of the bill draft. That is found on page 20. And it provides authority to utilize federal active transportation alternatives program funding. And that's a funding stream that's flexible but able to be used towards active transportation type activities. So it would provide explicit authority to utilize some of those federal funds towards a state active transportation program that exists in current state law. But does not have a regular funding stream. And then the next piece is a series of Senate-only sections that weren't adopted, and I can answer any questions on those, but I'll just skip to the other provision. This is found on page 6 of the provision status sheet. Line 130 is a series of agency policy provisions. So I'd mentioned earlier that the Senate language included some provisions from the 2018 supplemental omnibus, and what these next set of sections reflect are other provisions from that same supplemental omnibus that had also been passed out of this committee into the floor in House File 1623, and those are some of those were adopted in committee. In the conference committee as well. This involves a number of legislative turnbacks as well as some Department of Transportation policy provisions around upping the threshold for direct negotiation and some motor vehicle weight limits and dimension limit modifications. Some of those are federal conformity. And then some of the other provisions that were also in the 2018 supplemental omnibus are included in this bill draft. A series of changes on school bus visibility, authorizing use of supplemental lighting and making some technical changes in the lighting requirements, as well as school bus signs on the back of the bus for a temporary time. Expansion of a driving permit, where it can be used and what types of farm however a farm is organized is included. There's a modification to the transportation economic development reporting frequency a directive on seeking a waiver request for commercial driver's licenses to perform bus delivery, and then authorization for use of reserves for the Anoka County Regional Rail Authority. And then a final category are some other inclusions that are in the bill draft that are not reflective of what had happened during the House File 1555 Conference Committee. And for this, I'll shift back over, to the bill draft language and direct you to Article 2. And that starts on page 22. This is for the most part, this is the language that was proposed and discussed in the joint House-Senate hearing on replacing the Minlar's system. So this has a couple of things going on. One is some fee changes. Another is on the replacement of Minlar's, and then a couple of oversight. Well, one oversight committee replacing one that had been established 2 years ago, and then creation of a vehicle registration task force. So we'll just step somewhat quickly through those, and if there are member questions, we could move into more of the detail. Section 1 is the first of the surcharge increases. All of them have the reestablishment of the surcharge, and that would be on an ongoing basis at a $2.25 fee. And those sections put the surcharge on both motor vehicle transactions as well as driver's license transactions. The revenue goes into one of the operating accounts. It's a technology account, and that's the account that funds the driver and vehicle services information technology systems. And that is, just as an aside, a statutory that account has a statutory appropriation. So the direct appropriations of the budget don't reflect that funding stream.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to that specific item of the technology fee, I think it's worth noting that the House position was $475, I believe, and the governor's position was $250. We've ended up at the 2.25. There was also some discussion of sunsets within that, am I mistaken, or am I remembering that correctly?
You are remembering that correctly.
And there's no sunset on the technology fee in this legislation, is that correct?
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, that is correct. There are fee adjustments for some of the other fees that are set at a higher rate for close to 3 fiscal years and then drop down, but not all the way down to the current law. That's on driver's licenses and license plates, special plates, regular plates, and the like. Mm-hmm. And this, I also note that, the House position with the higher technology surcharge covered both the proposed, sorry, let me start over on this line of thought. The budget target identified a general fund stream to go specifically towards the Minlar's replacements, and the technology surcharge is another piece of that budget stream under the bill draft.
Thank you, Representative Orkelson. And Representative Elkins.
Same line of questioning, Mr. Chair. So in order to implement both the fee increases and the reimposition of the technology surcharge to support the new system does involve some programming and testing within Minlar's. I just want to make sure that in the agreement it's explicitly acknowledged that those costs will exist and that work will be done in Minlar's in order to implement those fees and fee increases.
Yes, and I think because I think this new transition is an important part of the bill, and we haven't you know, beyond the informational hearing we had last week. This committee, I think, has not had the chance to really dive deep into this, as Representative Torkelson pointed out. If there's an interest in that, and I totally understand why there would be, we do have DBS here, we do have the Department of Public Safety, and I think we should plan to direct some questions to them regarding a whole set of issues around this question. So so far we have Representative Bernardi on the lane, the speed limit and lane change issue, and then we'll have, I think we'll call up DBS, just giving you all a heads up that I think we're going to have a series of questions about this, what's in the bill on that whole vehicle transfer or vehicle titling system. So we've got those two things already teed up. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, so Article 2, Section 1 is one of the surcharge increase or reestablishments. That's followed by a series of sections that set a new fee amount for special plates. So that's done by cross-reference to a centralized plate fee provision that's found on page 29, section 10. So the fee increase is listed out at two different levels. So it's a higher increase from August 1, 2019 to the end of fiscal year 2022. And then drops down, as I had mentioned earlier, that the fee amount drops down a bit, but it's still higher than current law, and that fee structure would be on an ongoing basis. And the amount of the increase varies across the different types of plates, so I won't list out the nine different amounts, but you can see that on page 29. That's then followed by another series of sections that do the cross-referencing to the plate fee provision. And then on page 37, sections 25 and 26 make modifications to the fee rates for records access. So there's authorization for subscription service for driver records as well as bulk vehicle records. And those fees are increased, and the revenues from those both go into the technology account. So again, funding the information technology system activities. Section 27 is the filing fee increase that had been discussed earlier.
Mr. Burris, just if you could hold for a second, Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if anything changed from the bill as we heard it in an informational hearing to what's in this bill, but if there are changes, it would be helpful if those changes would be highlighted. I don't know if you even have kept being able to track. Well, I know there's lots of things flying back and forth here, but if there are changes from what was heard in our informational hearing to what's in the bill, that would be helpful to know what those are.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, I don't have a detailed review type list. A couple of highlights are, first, the inclusion of the filing fee that was not in what had been discussed in that joint hearing or in the Senate, and Senate proposals articulated to that point, as far as I know. So that's one. And the other is, I might note that the as introduced version of the Minlar's replacement bill had some amounts to be filled in at a later point. And then there was an amendment that was discussed in that joint hearing, and I can't recall if that had identified the temporary increase and then reduction. I think it did, but I haven't done a careful check on whether those amounts had shifted.
Representative Torkelson, again, I think that we should talk with DBS here today in this hearing, and there were some very late amendments going back and forth, and some language around staffing and these kinds of things that are worth noting and we should talk about later today, later this morning. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, members, the next piece is section 29 at the bottom of page 39, and this is another of the surcharge, tech surcharge provisions. And all of these, by the way, have the same dollar amount of $2.25. Section 30 is the driver's license fee increase. And this increase is 75 cents higher than what you'll see at the top of page 41 for that same limited 3-year period. So, again, there's that structure of a higher increase for a period of time, and then it lessens. There is also a technology surcharge imposition on driver's licenses found in this section. Section 31 makes modifications to the accounts. The key things center around the technology account that funds the IT system, including to require annual reporting about account activities. Section 32 makes modifications to the 2018 law that had provided for deficiency funding and set up a oversight structure. So this broadens the activities of an information technology auditor that the Office of the Legislative Auditor is directed to appoint and adds in review of the replacement information technology system. Section 33 provides a series of definitions that are used for the subsequent provisions on establishing an oversight committee, as well as providing for procurement and related activities around the replacement information technology system. So Section 34 establishes the Legislative Oversight Committee. It identifies the committee membership, sets out the duties, requires progress reporting. It also dissolves the Mid-Large Steering Committee that had been established in 2018. So this is something of a revision and replacement. Section 35 is the core of the replacement system language. So subdivision 2 directs procurement or sets up procurement requirements for replacing Mid-Lars. There is also a freeze on updates. This was touched on yesterday. A freeze on updates to Mid-Lars limited to a release that's scheduled to come out in the near future, as well as the changes to revise the system to impose the fees that are being established in this bill draft, and also allows for bug fixes. There's also a provision on the process around customizations to the replacement information technology system and a identification of what the legislative intent or aspirational timeline around this process is. You'll find that in subdivision 7. Another piece that is different, I had neglected to mention earlier, between what was discussed in the joint hearing and this bill draft is Deputy Registrar Aid. Mr. Lee had touched on the $13 million appropriation that is for the aid. Section 36 contains the aid calculation language. The formula is the same between this bill draft and a number of other bills and provisions that have been proposed. There are some differences in the subsequent subdivisions. Subdivision 3 was language proposed by the Senate that adds some timeline dates and specifics around the distribution of grants, including requiring a request in order to receive the grant funds. subdivision 4 is one piece of that was similar between what the Senate had proposed in some language and what was in the House language on state liability limitations. And a portion of what was in the House language is also found in subdivision 3 on the deputy registrar agreement to release and hold the state not liable. There were some other provisions that differed between House and Senate language, comparing the House position in 1555 and the what's you could call the Senate position from the joint hearing, and none of those items are included in this deputy registrar aid language. Section 37 provides a directive to the Department of Public Safety to look at self-service and on-the-spot type fulfillment options. Section 38 creates a task force to look at how motor vehicle registration and registration tax calculation is done. And it specifies the members of the task force, including some legislative representation and stakeholder representation, lays out the duties and requires a report by beginning of 2020. That, Mr. Chair, wraps up, I think, the bulk of that Article 2 Minlar's replacement provision, and I don't have other things to highlight, so I think we might move to questions.
Okay, so let's do this, members. We already have two questions on the table, which I think are important, and we have members from the Department of Public Safety that are prepared to go into a little bit more detail. I know we have one additional question already from Representative Cagle that we'll get to. But why don't we start with two topics that I think are of broad interest. One is the so-called move over provision that was adopted that Representative Bernardi talked about, and we can have Colonel Langer address her question and any other questions the committee has on that. And then we'll get into more detail about the provisions in the vehicle registration language, and we'll have representative from the Department of Public Safety on that one. But we'll start with Colonel Langer. And members, this was a topic of considerable conversation in the conference committee, and I think we came up with a very good compromise on this. We did not have language on the House side. Senator Jasinski had Minority Leader Doubt's language in the Senate side, and we came up with a compromise, and Colonel Langer will address Representative Bernardi's specific question, and then maybe you could, Colonel, if you could talk just very briefly about what this new language will mean for the motoring public. Okay. Representative Bernardi, did you want to restate your question, or are you clear on what the question was?
Okay.
Welcome to the committee. Colonel Langer, please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Matt Langer. I have the honor and privilege of serving as the Chief of the State Patrol. And Mr. Chair and Representative Bernardi, I'm prepared to answer the question, if you're ready. So what this language does, to answer your question, Representative, is it modernizes existing language requiring drivers to move out of the leftmost lane when practicable. It does not allow anyone to exceed the speed limit, nor does it impact anything related to the minimum speed limit as posted. And I don't think it has any impact to bicyclists or bike lanes, because it's asking them to move out of the leftmost lane, and it doesn't change anything related to lane usage or any of the other safe driving provisions under Chapter 169.
Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Colonel Langer, I have a question regarding, I thought it said going to the closest curb. I'm trying to find this language really quickly. Here it said in there,
Mr. Chair, Representative Bernardi, I think the first paragraph is what you're referring to on a two-lane road.
Okay.
What that's referring to is for the slow-moving vehicles, like truly slow-moving vehicles, thinking farm implements, thinking partially disabled vehicles. What that language does is it modernizes, again, existing language saying The goal is to keep your vehicle as far over to the right as possible so that it doesn't hinder other traffic in that lane. So if you can picture a farm implement that would be a vehicle traveling at 20 miles an hour on a two-lane road, common sense would say stay over to the right as far as possible. So that's what it does. But it doesn't impact the bicycling piece where you have to move around a bicyclist at a safe distance.
Yes, Mr. Chair?
Representative Bernardi.
So you feel comfortable with this language, Colonel Langer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bernardi, yes, the State Patrol does, and we have worked extensively with the author in the Senate and others on this language, and we are in support of modernizing the current language to what you see in Article 39.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions of Colonel Langer related to this provision? Representative
Not related to this provision.
Okay. Okay. You might be coming back later. Okay, thank you, members. What I'd like to do now is to, I know we'll probably, Representative Perkelson, I know, has questions. We may have other member questions related to the provisions in the bill around our vehicle titling and registration system changes. I know in the past we've had Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn. I'm not sure who from the department is ready to answer questions. Okay, the Deputy Commissioner is here. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Cassandra O'Hearn, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Public Safety.
Representative Perkelson, did you want to rephrase your question, or Deputy Commissioner, did you hear Representative Perkelson's initial couple of questions on this?
I think it would be helpful if he rephrases his question.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure I remember my own questions, but I do have some questions.
I think it had to do with sunsets. I think it had to do with fees. I think it had to do with changes between the bill that we heard on an informational basis last week and what's in this language. I think, as I recall, those were.
Those are all great questions, Mr. Chair.
And they're all your questions and all of our questions.
I'm going to go off on a different tangent first, and that has to do with the programming involved in these for old Menlars when it comes to these new fees. You know, we've had a bit of a rocky road with the reprogramming of old Menlars, and there's really two parts to this. One is the costs of reprogramming and whether we have, you know, the staff available to make those changes and the money needed to pay those folks that are going to do the reprogramming for the new fees. And second, is there any possibility that the changes we're going to make to accommodate these new fees might disrupt other portions of old Menlars that we've had some experience with that in the past, where one change is cascaded to cause other problems within the program? If you've had a chance to address those two things.
Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, we have worked with Minute to identify the cost associated with the programming necessary for the various fees. Those costs have been included in the estimates and will be recouped by the technology fee, and so that is in there. As far as will those changes cause cascading effects, as has happened with the last, you know, five releases, maybe it's more than that now, with Menlars, there has been extensive testing to ensure that that does not happen, and the testing will continue to occur to make sure that any changes to that system. But the limitations in the language are that after release 1.16 goes in, which is expected at the end of June, that the only changes would be for the fees or any bug fixes or things like that necessary to Menlars while we pivot to the new system.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Assistant Director O'Hearn. When it comes to the timing of this, I think there's the timing for 1.16 is one date, and if I'm not mistaken, the timing for deadline to have the fee changes in is another date. Is will those two efforts be coordinated, or are they completely independent?
Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, they are independent in the sense that 1.16 has been in development and in the test, and now in the testing phase. User acceptance testing has started. In that process, and the QA is already happening to get that release out the door on time. The fees would be an additional work process.
President Torkelson.
I'll give up the microphone.
Okay. I'm happy to also follow up on a couple of your questions. Deputy Commissioner, to your recollection, what are some of the more, or are there some significant changes in the bill before us versus the bill that was heard last week when Mr. King was testifying? Are there just a couple of things you may want to highlight to the committee that are changes in this language versus changes we heard a few days ago?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are some changes. I would not define them as significant changes. There were no changes to the recommendation with respect to the fees or any of the timelines. Those were recommended by Rick King, and those are in this bill. There were some what I consider minor changes for implementation purposes. One of them was in the procurement language. The original language had a requirement to have a public hearing on the terms of the contract, the proposed contract, and the Department of Administration had requested that be removed because those vendor negotiations are private conversations, and so that was removed. There was also in the Deputy Registrar reimbursement process. The original bill had Minnesota Management and Budget being the ones to implement that, and at the request of Minnesota Management and Budget, who informed us that they didn't have the information or the resources to do that, that is now the responsibility of the Department of Public Safety. There was a five-day payment having to be made within 5 days. That was changed to 30 days just to ensure that we could make the deadline there. And then there was also a change to the indemnification language.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Members, I know we have a few questions. I think that while the Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn is here, maybe if folks have questions that relate to provisions, policy, budget, and otherwise that relate to the Department of Public Safety and driver vehicle services, maybe while the Deputy Commissioner is before us, we could get those questions out on the table. And Representative Cagle had one about driver's license suspensions. Representative Cagle?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think one of the things that was kind of disappointing to me at the end was a lot of the equity provisions that got stripped out of the bill. And one of them was the driver's license suspension ban. And was wondering why that got taken out, and if what the reasoning was behind removing that provision.
I can. That's more probably of a political question, and I can do my best to answer that. We felt very strongly on the House side about these provisions. I don't think there was a lot of. In terms of the transportation folks in the Senate, I didn't detect a lot of opposition. But the problem with this was it was carried in the Department of Public Safety omnibus bill, and the Senate chair, is my understanding, was not in favor of moving forward on this, and I think we just would not have been appropriate for us to carry this in the transportation bill, given the judiciary chair's objections. So that's, I think, my understanding of why this isn't in here, and I don't know if the commissioner has any other insights. So that's where we're at on that. Representative Petersburg and then Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and my question refers around the fee structure for the new fees that we have here. And because this is kind of a new venture and we really don't know what the costs are going to be into the future, I think this is a good place to start. But early on in Minlars, I know that when there was the problem with the rollout and so forth, there was a lot of finger pointing to the point where it seemed like deputy registers are on one side and the vehicle services were on another. And I just wanted to say on the record that I see the two as being together. They are one body. The deputy registers are an extension or an arm of the vehicle services. And because of that, I felt, and I still think, the department really doesn't communicate well with deputy registers and ask for the input. And so I'm hoping as we move forward and these fees are continually being reviewed, that the department will certainly look at the department registers, the deputy registers, to try to keep them whole from their cost. Because if you are together as one unit, when one suffers, everything suffers. And I think it's important that we maintain that working relationship. So I'm hoping that is one of the extensions that you can take back with you, that you can continually look at what is healthy for everybody in regards to both fees and the workload as well. Kind of more of a comment than a question, I guess.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Representative Kosner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Deputy Commissioner. Thanks for being here. This part of the bill with the new replacement system, about close to $66 million, is quite a hefty amount. And as has been noted, we haven't vetted that part out as much as we traditionally do. But I understand why it's here in this bill. In a conversation earlier with Governor Waltz, in previous early part of the session, requesting $13.2 million to continue the Minmar system, and now we've switched tracks, and that, I think, is the appropriate move to do. But in that conversation, he asked for those funds and said that he would own it. And we've had some discussion previously of where the fault was, and the over $100 million of Minmar's, whether it started with Governor Plenty and our side, or me personally, take a look at over the last 8 years at least of the previous administration, Governor Dayton's lack of management and oversight in tracking that. What has the conversations been so that we can feel comfortable voting for this part of the bill? What has the conversations been with the administration that the oversight will in fact be better and more accountable, and that the Governor Waltz is ready to own this, because we're putting a lot more money into this again, and constituents want these services to function. And I understand it's a very technical nature, but what assurances have been that the Governor Waltz will own this project, so that taxpayers can feel that we're finally on the right track?
Before you answer, Deputy Commissioner, thank you for the question. I mean, I think, you know, we're all owning this. And this is a direction I think that many folks on your side of the aisle wanted to go. We have a Blue Ribbon Commission that I think was led very ably by Rick King from Thomson Reuters, who has, you know, gone above and beyond the call of duty in terms of engaging with the legislature, engaging with the department, the governor himself. So I think we're all in this, but I think it's a valid question to ask the executive branch, you know, the extent to which they are going to continue to be involved in oversight. So with that, Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kosnick, committee members, the governor has made it clear that he owns it. The commissioner of public safety, John Harrington, has made it clear that he is responsible. The language in here specifically, and I was looking for the page quickly and I'm not finding it, but the language in here specifically identifies the Department of Public Safety as the owners of this project, making that very clear that the department owns the project. Minute is a technical lead, but it is the department's responsibility. In addition, there continues to be legislative oversight, and in addition to the Blue Ribbon Council that I'm sure will also continue to be involved in this. There will be continued reports and legislative oversight that's all spelled out as well.
Mr. Chair, thank you for those comments, and you know, we all want this to succeed. It's just that taxpayers and legislators are get a little weary of continually extending significant more amounts of money. So we all want it to succeed, and we hope that this is the right path, and but certainly acknowledge that it's continually more expensive, and there's little patience left for steps in this direction. But I hope, Mr. Chair, that we are on the right path, and I appreciate your comments here today and that of the on behalf of the governor.
And members, thank you, Representative Kozak, and members, and that the specific oversight language you can find on 4926 in the bill. And I would also note that even though we're going with a third-party vendor, you know, there's still going to be expense. So thank you for pointing that out. While we're on the topics related to Department of Public Safety and DVS, Representative Elkins.
Just thank you, Mr. Chair. Speaking from the perspective of someone who has read all of the OLA reports related to MnDOTLARS, I think it would be remiss if I didn't point out that we've had some discussion about testing, and especially regression testing, this morning. And one of the things that I found, you know, most appalling in reading the reports was the observation that a consulting company, Sogetti unit of Capgemini, had been engaged to develop a testing plan in 2016, and their funding was terminated at the end of 2016, just as the program was about to actually go into testing and turn back over to a DPS unit that was underfunded and unprepared to take that responsibility. And so I think it's, this body bears some responsibility as well. And I would also observe that among the Blue Ribbon panel's recommendations is a substantial increase in DPS personnel, so that they are in a position this go around to be able to adequately support this project.
Thank you. Are there any additional questions related to our new licensing system or any related provisions that impact the Department of Public Safety and Driver Vehicle Services? Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you. I guess my final question would be in regard to the relationship between DPS and Minute. That seems to have been one of the issues that has caused some consternation and possibly under performance here in the last number of years. With this new contract that's being proposed to be sought out, is there a dramatic shift in that relationship between DPS and Minute? You mentioned already that DPS will own the program. Will Minute continue to bill the department in the same way, or will there be changes along those lines?
Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, we have a centralized IT system here at the state, and so Minute will continue to bill the department for the IT services that the department uses. That's a funding a payment invoice process. There will be Minute staff who work on the project. That is true with any off-the-shelf vendor system. There are still Minute needs in operations, in help desk support in those various different areas, and that will continue to be utilized as well, and that's developed within the plan and set forth again by Rick King. He has identified basic number of staff and services. We can also look at the driver system, which was developed by a vendor, to see that the business worked directly with the vendor, but also with Minute. to ensure that that system is connected properly to all of the state systems that it needs to do, and that support is there. And I believe if you ask driver's license agents, they will tell you that that system works quite well.
President Perkelson.
Well, thank you for that, and that's the reports I've heard, too, that driver's license system and that kind of situation that's been established with that program seems to be working well. Are you comfortable with this new format?
Deputy Commissioner Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, I am comfortable with the Blue Ribbons Committee's recommendation to proceed with a new direction with a off-the-shelf product.
Thank you. Last call for DPS-DBS questions. Thank you very much. Thank you, for Deputy Commissioner, for your and Commissioner Harrington and your staff's engagement with us over the entire session, but particularly the last couple of weeks. It's been incredibly helpful and valuable. We appreciate your work and look forward to the next chapter and hopefully having a much smoother vehicle titling and registration system. So we look forward to continuing to be your partners in that regard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may, I want to thank the committee as well. We've had a lot of conversations over this session, and the department also looks forward to working with you in the future. And if I could just send a shout out to Andy Lee and Matt Burris, who have really been helpful, particularly in the last week.
Thank you. I would concur. Members, let's get back to maybe some more general questions about the bill before us. And again, we're not taking any action here. This is an informational hearing, but we would really like to make sure that everyone's questions are answered. And so I know Representative Cagle is on the list, and I don't have anyone else, but please indicate if you do. Okay, Representative Cagle, then Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I just kind of wanted to express some of my disappointment around some of the equity issues that weren't included. The Indian employment preference, the driver's license suspension ban, the Met Council's emission-based bus deployment, and also the traffic stop study. It was a little surprising, too, in one of the committees, some of the senators indicating that they didn't believe that emissions caused negative health impacts. And just, you know, there was a lot of really good things that we could have done that just didn't make it in. And I'm really, really disappointed.
I share those disappointments. Hopefully, again, these questions can be revisited next year. They are important. Representative Koznick.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. Just a couple, I think, three kind of simple items. One was the Met Council bonding and debt that's listed on the provision status sheet that guided us. I just want clarification. I believe that's just the regional, I can't even remember it right now, their traditional authority.
Correct.
And then the debt part authorization, that's just the standard language, right? It's not any new.
Representative Koznick, I can I'll take a crack at that, and then of course we can have staff answer as well. But yes, this is bonding authority that we do on a biennial basis. It's sometimes carried in our bill, it's sometimes carried in the tax bill. This year it's carried in our bill. It's a lot for bus purchase, rolling stock, et cetera, standard, and generally not controversial. So I don't know if anything else that Mr. Lee would want to add to that.
I just want a clarification, so unless it's something different than what the chair said, I'm satisfied.
Yeah.
And then, Mr. Chair, it looked like it was a Senate provision for the dedicated funds expansion report. If we could just have a little bit more clarity on that, the funds expenditure, I believe it was.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and Representative Krasnick, that is found in the bill draft on page 67. You'll see it's section 6. So this is a similar to a report that was required on a one-time basis, I think in two different occasions in past transportation bills. And this would create an ongoing reporting requirement of every other year. And the directive is to both the MnDOT and the Department of Public Safety to identify expenditure as well as transfers out of the two core funds, the Trunk Highway Fund and the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. And that would be a look back at the prior two fiscal years and would also direct the departments to identify purposes for the expenditures.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this probably what the Senate was referring to as their leakage report, I think, now?
It is, and I was just looking
you probably don't want me to use that word.
No, I was looking over at Representative Petersburg, who seems to be our resident plumber on the
And then, Mr. Chair, just one last question on the on page 20 of the bill, the contingency that we talked about previously. I believe it's, if I can find it, was a talked about exceeding the closing balance projected at the end of the 2019 legislative session. Is that MMB's general forecast, or how is that projected, I guess, and then how would we know and when will that be that benchmark be noted, I guess?
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and members, I will double-check, but I believe that it is against the projected at the end of the fiscal 19 fiscal year 2019. So once session closes, then MMB estimates impact of session, and so it changes from the forecasted close of 19 versus what actually happens. And the closeout of 19, even though fiscal year 19 ends in June 30th, there's usually a period in which expenditures are tied out, and so the hard close comes sometime after. So you'll see in the language on timing on 21.15, the transfers in this section must be completed before October 15th, 2019. So the determination would come sometime before then.
Representative Kosnick, do you have any?
Yeah, line 21.15 is kind of listed in there, and I guess I just for the public to kind of know where that contingency forecast is, so and me as well. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I recognize your side of the aisle's disappointment in a number of the provisions, but I just want to thank the staff and you personally for your committee time and allowing us to go over the bill and even during committee the deliberations that we had. Certainly we have different approaches to some of our transportation issues, but I appreciate the committee and your leadership in it and the work that was done here. And, you know, I think despite the disappointment, we are moving forward again. Maybe not as fast as you like, though.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Are there any other questions regarding the bill? Representative Forkelson, we will have some public testimony as well, so this isn't we're not concluding the hearing per se now, but just sort of finalizing the committee members' questions. Representative Torkelson.
Yeah, a couple of questions regarding the state troopers. One, the contract situation. I don't know if that was going to be in this bill or carried somewhere else, the authorization of their contract that's, I think, running out quite
soon. There was, yes, thank you for raising that, Representative Torkelson. There was some discussion about that on Tuesday, and I just wanted to clarify where we ended up on that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, there is not in the House position, there was an appropriation to management and budget from the Trunk Highway Fund for a State Patrol salary study that is not included. in this bill draft. We'll have to check and see if there are provisions in other bills relating to that. I think I will double check. I think that there might be something in the state government draft. Particular to law enforcement contract funding, there's a provision, the contingent funding in Section 12 on page 21 relates to contracts. Should a contract be entered into before June 30th, 2019, that's specific to law enforcement contracts.
So, yes, again, page 21, section 12. I think I remember that language being discussed.
Hey, just a couple of other things real quick. Mr. Lee, authorization of trunk highway fund spending, I believe there's a balance available there. Is any of that being authorized in this bill?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, yes, the various appropriations to the state road construction. So if you go to your spreadsheet, starting on page 2, on the bottom of page 2 for operations and maintenance, and then the various appropriations that are the component units of state road construction, so then planning and research program delivery, and the largest state road construction. You can see in the draft transportation omnibus finance columns T through X that there are appropriation increases. Since since there were no changes in tax rates for transportation taxes, this amount of increased spending, what that does is it draws down the highway fund balance. Most of these provisions were included in the governor's finance package that are specific to agency operating increases, but also state road spending increases. So this would, I believe, and MnDOT could probably speak to this as well, bring the unreserved trunk highway fund balance down to about, I believe, closer to $16 million in the close of fiscal 2021. So it's spending most of those unreserved trunk highway fund balance that accrue because of natural growth in the existing transportation taxes.
Thank you.
Representative Robinson, did you want the agency to...
If they have justify? Any more detail on that would be helpful. So most of that went to the operational increases. Is that, Mr. Lee, is that correct?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and members, it's a mix between operational increases and state road construction spending. I think the largest single amount is the state road construction spending. You can see that on... line 135, column V, at $150 million increase over the biennium. But I can get back to the committee with a breakdown of where all those increases went across the agency.
Thank you.
Is there someone from MnDOT that can address this unencumbered expenses question? Welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Josh Knatter-Hubinger, Budget Director at MnDOT. Representative Torkelson, the requests that are in this proposal largely draw down the available trunk highway fund balance, the new revenues that were authorized in 2017. A lot of the appropriation authority from that new revenue was one-time in nature in 18 and 19. So going into 2021, we were sitting on a fund balance of about $300 million, give or take, in 2021. These increases would draw that down to about $20 million at the end of 21, and then it's about $100 million at the end of 23. And again, the largest increase is two state road construction, as Mr. Lee stated. The rest is spread across the other budget activities that the agency has.
Thank you. That's right.
Representative Torkelson.
That's it for that area. I just have one other question that I, not in this area.
Okay.
Really good.
Any, or again, while we have the MnDOT here, and there's of course other staffers that could ask, answer other questions. Anyone have any questions related to any of the provisions that impact MnDOT in this bill? We had some discussion yesterday, but okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson.
Mr. Chair, this is a question you might be able to answer. On page 49, subdivision 6 in the bill, there's language relating to customization of our business practices as it relates to MNLARS. Have any of those been identified? And if not, how will we handle those going into the future? I mean, some of those probably are can be handled by the department, and others may require statutory changes. Could you just, I know it's probably a lot of unknowns there, but I think it's an important topic area.
Thank you, Representative Brooks. I appreciate your bringing that up. I am not, it's not an area that I've delved into in terms of the specific business practices. But I don't know if our staff or anyone from the department could answer that question. It's just not something I could.
Ms. O'Hearn is on her way to the testifier stand. I'm
very sure quickly. That was fast. Okay. This is one of those phone a friend situations. I think. Welcome back to the committee.
I'm still Cassandra O'Hearn, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Public Safety. I haven't gotten a text saying otherwise. So with respect to, Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, with respect to the question about customization, the Blue Ribbon Committee specifically said to limit to the extent possible any customization necessary of a off-the-shelf product. What they talked about that for a couple of different reasons, but mainly the less customization there is, the more you can take advantage of the research and development and security and all of the work that the vendor does to keep their product up to date, and you're not doing customized patches. So the language specifically says minimize it when possible, and then to the extent that customization is necessary, ultimately those requests need to be made to the commissioner, and it is the commissioner of public safety who makes the determination as to whether to accept a request for customization or not. And then there are reports to the legislative committee with respect, oversight committee with respect to what is being customized. In addition, there is the inclusion of the task force to take a look at other areas of modernization or changes as we move forward. So with respect that there will be likely at some point some recommendations moving forward that might require legislative changes, to the extent that that happens, that will come through, I believe, that process. And in the meantime, the department will be working with the vendor to determine what within the existing process can happen, and if there are areas where it's anticipated that there could be changes in the future to ensure that that whatever their system does, that that is a configurable process. So it is structured in a way that either change can easily occur, rather than having to have a large development ask.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that. I think it's really important that all of us involved in this transition commit to that process, whether we are legislators or directors or whatever our title is, because it's really important. Otherwise, the chance for extra expense and even potential delays will result. Now, luckily, we're going to have another legislative session before the program rolls out, so I trust that the department will be communicating with the legislature regarding any need for statutory changes, and that we work together with our colleagues across the street to make sure that those happen in a way that expedites this whole process.
Point's very well taken.
And I just have one more point, Mr. Chair. Earlier in our conversation, you referred to Representative Petersburg as the plumber. I just want to make sure that that has no relationship whatsoever to Watergate.
No, he's specializing in leakage from the highway user distribution fund. Some people are just too young to even remember that. Okay, we have, this is our list as of now. Representative Joachim is first, Representative Elkins, Representative Runbeck, and Representative Petersburg, and anyone else who wants to speak or ask questions, please wave. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Some of us still do appreciate history, though. So, and I do appreciate Representative Torkelson's comments about keeping the customization under control. The language is great in here for working with the other entities that are implementing the system with registrars and having to run it through DVS. But I am concerned, as I bet the rest of us around this table are, about some of the bills that may come forward requesting customizations and trying to manage people's expectations that if they're going to do that, it's going to cost money. Because you get what you pay for. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Joachim. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also want to follow up on Representative Torkelson's comments. So generally when you go out and you buy an off-the-shelf system that's already been adopted by a significant number of other customers, as we're likely to do, there's kind of a presumption that I've usually found it to be the case that the design of those types of systems tend to reflect a consensus of best practices around that particular application, and that I'm sure is part of why the Blue Ribbon Expert Panel, you know, wanted to minimize the customization as well, is because if you adopt the position that the Council of Experts recommended and which is reflected in this bill, it will pressure DPS to look seriously at changing its practices, its processes. So one of the things that I observed reading through all of the OLA reports is that while there was, in fact, a deliberate shift in workload from DPS to the deputy registrars, and that's appropriate. Basically, what you want to do is get the data right at the first point of entry so that it doesn't have to be touched again. But in the design of MNLARS, what was disappointing to me is that I did not see any evidence of corresponding cost savings on the back end in the back office. There was redundancies. We were asking the deputy registrars to take on more work without saving any effort that was being done in the back office. And I think that, in the change control process, if we see that happening again or attempts to have that, you know, evade the need for change within DPS, that the oversight committees will push back on that. And then they also observe that there is, in fact, that the legislation does set up a second task force, a vehicle registration task force, which seems to be specifically charged with looking at changes in the in legislation that we ought to make in order to facilitate this process. So, and digging into that, it's probably things like, you know, how are we, what basis are we assessing our registration fees on? Because the current system, as evidenced by the September OLA report on transaction accuracy, clearly laid bare the fact that contradictions in our current statutes, requirements that we rely on data that's not commonly available, is a big part of the problem in terms of a lot of the issues that have been observed in MNLARS as it was rolled out.
Thank you for those comments. Again, thanks for your expertise in this area. It's very, we need all hands on deck in terms of the legislature and understanding some of these technological issues. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to those points, Ms. O'Hearn said the word modernization, and it seems to me like there are two things that need to be done. One is sort of the modernization of the current system, and then, you know, to make certain that they're in the final product and the after the fact, that we don't do customizing to the, you know. So I wonder if there's enough attention, I guess, made here. I mean, I don't sense in the description of what the Executive Steering Committee is going to be doing that there's, you know, is there a sufficient amount of attention given to that we do need to look at the current system and make certain that, I mean, of the hundreds of things that's required to do, that's going to happen. So I just sort of am echoing, I think, what President Elkins is saying, too. But it seems like there's two things, modernization of what we've got going currently, and so that we will be minimizing the customization.
Thank you, Representative Rumbach. I mean, these are really important questions. I think that, you know, when we first, well, 2 years ago when some of the more significant problems with Mindlars really surfaced, I mean, it has surfaced really since 2008, since the beginning of this, but we did set up this oversight committee. We do have something similar in this bill, and that's set up because we felt that, you know, even with this third-party contractor, we're going to need to be, as a legislature, on top of this. And so I do feel that this bill, you know, continues that effort that I think Representative Torkelson in many ways helped start and pioneer. And so we're the committee of jurisdiction over this, and certainly my intention, and I think there's bipartisan agreement that we've got to stay very active and involved. And so I think this bill, you know, continues that, you know, that structure that we set in place even prior to this change. And so
Well, thank you. I just wanted to, Mr. Chair, just sort of comment on it because it seems like there are two separate things, you know, that we need to be working on.
Absolutely. No, I completely agree with you on that. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. And, you know, this is a little bit redundant from what is being said, but I do think it's important to realize that, you know, this customization, it really goes beyond just whether or not we customize with the existing program. As the language says, whenever possible, business practices must be changed to conform to the new system. And that in itself implies that whoever is deciding that is aware of what the new system is, what the parameters are, and that we align our business practices to that as well, such as example as do we need as many redundancies as we have, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't think it's real clear in this. We talk about the customization and the new system, but we don't really talk about who's going to be reviewing the current business practices on whether or not it is indeed still best practices or if it's just because we've always done it this way. And so I just want to be on the record saying I think that's a critical piece of it, that we have to kind of review the operations of the driver vehicle licensing system and to make sure that we have the system working properly for what we needed to do, not just because we want something, but indeed that it is fulfilling the requirements. And so, for the record,
Thank you, and noted. No one else is on the list. Let's move to the public testimony. We do have a number of people that have been waiting very patiently, and I want to get to them right away. The first testifier is Hennepin County Commissioner Mike Opat. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. I'm Mike Opat. I'm a Hennepin County Commissioner representing District 1, which is the cities of Robbinsdale, Crystal, New Hope, Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park, and Osseo, which I want to make clear because it will be evident about that in a little bit. Mr. Chairman, thank you for this opportunity to testify on the compromise bill. Appreciate the hearing and appreciate the work that went into it, and particularly your work, Mr. Chairman, for trying to advance an agenda that will improve transportation throughout all of Minnesota. I'm going to start first with what the county board supports in the bill. The list is short, actually, but I'll get to it. We support, certainly, as the level of government who deals primarily with the disabled community, more than any other level of government. We appreciate the Metro Mobility funding increase of $23 million and the structural change that will now separate and not leave it in competition with the rest of Metro Transit. We appreciate the base funding to keep the lights on in general fund dollars for Metro Transit. We appreciate the included fix to GANs, which allows the Met Council to bond at a better rate for BRT lines and Southwest Light Rail lines. Unfortunately, Mr. Chairman, that's really where it stops for us. The status quo is woefully inadequate. We share many of the members of the committee's disappointment with this bill. Members on both sides of the aisle have talked about the need for additional funding, and there's bipartisan agreement that Minnesota's transportation system needs additional funding to maintain our aging infrastructure. Due to declining revenues and increasing costs, as I think I testified before, the state is facing a $6 billion transportation funding gap over the next 10 years. I served on the AMC Transportation Working Group along with commissioners and county staff from across Minnesota. Over 70 counties passed resolutions supporting significant funding, additional funding for transportation, and of course that's not included in this bill. It's critical the new revenue was proposed by the House and the governor to improve safety, reduce congestion, and modernize our transportation system for Minnesota's future. I want to talk a little bit about transit, and I want to especially speak a little bit about the Bottineau light rail line. We asked for the Bottineau liability language or provision that was mentioned. I testified about it over here. It is the same provision we asked for and received with the Southwest Light Rail Line that allows the county and Met Council to negotiate with, in this particular case, one railroad. In Southwest, it was three railroads, and it was included. And our mere request this time was to change that date in the statute to allow for an ease of negotiations with the railroad, and that was not included. It's a minor change in statute. It is incredibly disappointing that it isn't in the bill. I've been a county commissioner for 26 years now. For more than 15 years, there has been overwhelming support on our Hennepin County Board. Most of the votes have been 6-1 for the regional LRT plan we developed both ourselves and with other counties in the metro. We believe that enhances the transportation options for the county and the region. In Hennepin's case, it provides equity within our county in terms of where the lines would go. Southwest now under construction, Hiawatha and Green Line done, and the Bottineau line is the next that would add the LRT option for residents in my district who have been paying the taxes for everybody else's transit for years and years. Over time, our resolve has been tested as state funding has withered and ended. Hennepin has stepped up once again and again to confirm that we will pay for this. And in fact, the only local funding is coming from Hennepin County for Bottineau. We look for little from the legislature, a little bit of assistance to help us negotiate, and we didn't receive it this time. Quite frankly, I don't understand whether the Senate opposition is about spite of some kind, ignorance, or just the denial of success that the light rail lines have had. All of the ones that have been built have far exceeded their ridership estimates far into the future. As I drove in Brooklyn Park yesterday in the last few days, and I see in the morning rush hour the cars streaming in by the thousands from other counties to work in Hennepin County. On my way over here today, as I see them streaming into to downtown Minneapolis to work, it's not lost on me that Hennepin County is the economic engine of Minnesota. There's no denying it. The activity is there, and the county has stepped up to do the investment in transportation that's needed to keep, maintain, and enhance that position. So I would just say this, opposition to that is not thoughtful, and I don't think this is thoughtful, quite frankly, opposition to the county's LRT plan, transit plan, transportation plan is really at the peril to the entire state. We need to move people. There need to be options. And our plan has been neither capricious nor is it ever reckless. It's long established, more than a decade, probably two decades, and those of us who represent 171,000 constituents answer to those people, and our vision has been sustained time and again. So I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I certainly look forward to a better outcome next session.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Opat, and thank you for you've made several appearances in our committee, and it's very much appreciated.
Yep. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ferguson.
Well, thank you. Well, thank you, Commissioner, for being with us today. As has been reiterated, I don't know how many times, by the railroad, they are not interested in negotiating with the county on the current route of Bottineau. I just don't understand how this route selection could possibly have occurred, given that the major party involved in the and affected by the route is just plain not interested in your route.
Yep. Mr. Chairman, Representative Ferguson, I am delighted to respond to that question. First off, that is a very recent development by the railroad. It is also a very predictable response by the railroad. For years, we planned along that route, sought the railroad's advice and counsel. They went along with exchanges of technical drawings amidst a whole host of other things. If you will recall, the railroad was opposed to the North Star commuter rail running on their tracks. They've been opposed to minor property exchanges with concerning the Southwest LRT lines, taking enormous amounts of negotiation and ridiculous negotiation at the public expense to get to agreements that have nothing to do with their operations. If you look around the country, and I have, Mr. Representative Torkelson, Mr. Chair, traveled to Denver to talk with them, there are joint uses of rail corridors all over the western part of this country. And I would wager that in every instance, the railroad initially said no. It is a predictable negotiating posture and one that can will be overcome once we get to negotiations, which, of course, the provision would allow.
Thank you, Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Opat's. Appreciate you being here. You know, one of the newer forms of transit that we've been discussing is arterial bus transit, similar to the express lines that we have coming out of my district. Is there a local contribution from Hennepin County on some of those proposed lines, or I think it's just the D line right now?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative, we have contributed through CTIB to the BLRT lines that happen through CTIB, but no, that's not the county's main objection, with the exception of light rail, which the county board took a policy decision to be involved with. We're not going to expand and expose our property tax base to other lines, other modes of transit. We're interested in LRT. We have been part of the Orange Line and endure with that. And, of course, we help with the Red Line to Dakota County. But, no, we're not going to look to further BLRT lines.
And, Representative Koznick, Washington County is very involved in the Gold Line. So counties have been engaged with bus rapid transit as transit ways, but not the arterial pieces of Met Council. Has been a Met Council responsibility.
Mr. Chair, I might add that Hennepin County invested in the Gold Line as well. And in fact, when we went through a mode analysis over a number of years, we selected LRT.
Mr. Chair, if I may just kind of wrap up, from our side of the aisle, we've expressed a little bit more interest in some of these arterial lines that I believe that's one of the ways that the Metro Transit is updating their route services. And I think as we have that discussion, it's important to note what the local contributions are and the similarity to Orange Line busing versus now called arterial. They're very similar, but the local contributions from the counties are much different, and I think we, one area that we may need to work on is aligning that. But also, from the commissioner's comments, the focus on LRT, is almost as in opposition of funding some of these arterial systems that we're also planning on building out. So I think it's the priority of, if I understood you correctly, you're more interested in some of the LRT than arterial buses, the arterial trains, and it's going to make it more difficult if there isn't standardization in the local contributions of those types of bus systems, or if counties just are adverse to doing that to build out LRT.
I'm going to have Commissioner Opat answer that question, but I want to let committee members that were kind of going a little far afield from some of the issues that before us. But
Mr. Chairman, I'll be brief. Representative, over the last decade, the county looked at the options, and we and county alone and then counties to the CTIP, and we adopted a schedule for transit investments. We're keeping in mind that transit is not any county's fundamental obligation. In fact, it's been entered into by counties with the idea of really plugging a hole or trying to enhance things that weren't there was not funding to enhance. So we brought our tax base to light rail. That's what we've done in Hennepin County, and that's what we're funding. The Orange Line, what we were asked to, told to by the legislature as part of CTIP, so we did it, like we usually have to do when we come over here to St. Paul. But the light rail lines have been established for 10 years, and just in terms of local control or investment, five cities along the line, along the Botna line, have redone their zoning, have done their long-range planning, have readied themselves for this line, and await it. It's with the understanding that the county would step up and do all the local funding, even as the state stepped back. So it's long established. I know you're far afield and running short on time, so I'll stop there. But we'll be back in session because this the route is not going to change, the mode is not going to change. The 170,000 people in my district and beyond my district are resolute that this is this second largest capital investment project with all its jobs, with all its economic development that would come to in state's history needs to be built. Thank you.
And I'll just say, you know, Representative Kosnick, I do appreciate your support for arterial BRT and at least the rhetoric that I hear from the other side of the aisle in support of that. But, you know, 2 years ago, there was an opportunity to fund it. We didn't get that from your side of the aisle, and you opposed our funding plan to do that this year. So if there is a way that we can come together and put some real money on the table, we'll have a chance as early as potentially tomorrow or next week to do that with the D-Line, arterial bus rapid transit. So let's get $20 million for the D-Line in the bonding bill, and I think that would be an action that could match the rhetoric just in the next couple of days.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify to the previous question about the Orange Line, the Hennepin County is 80% of that funding for the Orange Line, which, of course, goes beyond Hennepin County's borders.
Yeah. So anyway, but thank you for that, and I think Representative Joachim had a comment or question. I don't know.
Yeah.
Perhaps stay close, Commissioner Opat, because we've got one more here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just actually wanted to thank Commissioner Opat and Hennepin County and the citizens of Hennepin County for all of the work they have done at the local level to increase transit, especially when the state falls down on what they should be putting in. You have been tremendous partners, and it's time for the state to step up to the plate. And I know it's been a long battle, but there's some of us that will continue to want to push to make sure, as Representative Hornstein, Chair Hornstein said, to make sure that people put their money where their mouth is. So I just want to thank you so much for that. Sure. And very encouraged that we are still continuing to be partners. I know sometimes partners let each other down, but we still have to continue the dance. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Opat. Representative Elkins, do you have a key question for
just observations based on his testimony?
This is the Transportation Committee. You can check out anytime you like,
but you can never leave, right?
I just want to make two observations here. One is that under federal law, under federal law, transit agencies are not allowed to negotiate with freight railroads until all of the environmental work is complete. And so you have to spend millions of dollars in planning to get through your route planning and your environmental work before you can even begin start talking with the freight railroads, which gives them a tremendous, you know, advantage in the negotiations because you've got all of these millions of dollars in sunk costs and investment in community outreach to pick a line, and only then do you get to start talking with them, and they hold all the chips. Then the second observation is that in the current regime, the counties are picking up the tab for the transitways within their counties, with one exception. As part of the negotiations around the dissolution of CTIB, Dakota County has the regional taxpayers as a whole picking up the operating cost subsidy for the red line into Dakota County, and they're the only county that has that kind of an exception for their transitway. And that's going to have to be addressed at some point.
Okay. I think, Commissioner, I thought we can...
I can take my transfer now.
We appreciate your being here. The next, we have two people that I believe may be testifying together. Todd, oh, just one. Okay, Tony Quillis is here. Todd Hill is going to testify for the private deputy registrars. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Todd Hill with Hill Capital Strategies, and I'm here on behalf of the Private Deputy Registers, or the Deputy Register Business Owner Association. It's kind of a bittersweet day for us. We are in a bill that looks like it's going to advance to the governor, and it's going to provide some relief in the form of the $13 million in compensation. But it doesn't include kind of the other half of the package, which is the fee increase, which is really, really important to the deputy registrars on an ongoing basis. I think it's important for everyone to understand that the $13 million in compensation that are included in this bill in no way, shape, or form make any deputy register whole for the losses that they've incurred over the last 2 years. For many of the members that I represent, this will represent somewhere between 20 and 40% of the compensation that they've lost based on the runs that we received earlier this year. So I have a number of members who have lost in excess of seven figures trying to keep these systems operating, trying to keep these offices open, and it is a disappointment that it's taken us this long to get to this part, to this point. And the other provision that was in the Senate bill that was really important to the registrars was the indemnification provision. And I did want to spend just a couple seconds talking about why that is important. For the last 2 years, we know that the data that's been put into this system is wrong. We know that there are incredible errors. And some of it is certainly the fault of the deputy register. Many times we are making decisions or making changes to records based upon advice that we're given over the phone by DBS. And our concern is that at some point, some individual is going to come back to us and say, I couldn't sell my car. I had an expensive exotic sports car that I sold in an auction, and I needed the title. And I couldn't get the title because it was wrong, because of an error. And because of that, I've lost millions of dollars or thousands of dollars. And who's going to be responsible for that? And we are very fearful that that is what is going to happen. These records are going to be flawed for many, many years. As long as these cars are in the system that have a flawed record, it's likely that record is going to follow that car. And someone is going to be held liable for that. And that we hope next year we can come back and revisit that provision. Then the third piece, really, we've talked about this as a package, and the package included some kind of fee increase. And I will tell you, I'd love to read the comments that I've received over the email since this bill was released, but this is daytime TV, and I might get in trouble if I read back some of them. But to many of the members, it feels like a kick in the gut. We asked for a $2.50 increase on various transactions, a $4 increase on the driver's license fees to offset the increased workload for processing driver's licenses, and a $10 fee increase for duplicate titles. And what came back is a dollar. And we appreciate everything that the House did. It was in your bill. But we're very frustrated by that. And deputy registrars depend upon transactions to make money. That you guys set the fees for them. You provide the software for them. There's not much they can do to correct the problem that they have right now. But since MIMARS has been released, we're unable to process as many transactions as we did prior to MIMARS. And the transactions we are processing are taking much longer, so our staffing costs have gone up as well. And the last thing I would point out, this is the third MIMARS bill that will go to the governor, and the frustration for the registrar is it's taken this long to get any compensation, but it's also frustrating that DVS has come in and three times now asked for increased fees or increased money, and the state has done that every time. And the reason they've asked for that, obviously there's the cost of buying this new package, and that being set aside, though, DDS has come in and said that their operating costs have increased, they've had to hire more people, they've had to increase their staff, they've had overtime, and we've given them millions of dollars. And there's millions of dollars of fee increases in this bill to help DDS. And yet again, the registrars, who are the front line, who are doing the bulk of this work, are kind of left holding the bag. And it is extremely frustrating. Again, we thank you for the $13 million. We know the House fought for those provisions, and it was the other body. But it is a very big frustration and a very, very big disappointment for the deputy registrars. And with that, I thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Mason. Thank you for your testimony, Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just like to echo the comments of Mr. Hill. I mean, it is so hard to sit here and know that the people that have worked so hard for the last couple of years with, we're just not even trying to make them whole or compensate them. So I can apologize for what little control I have over this, but again, thank you for your comments.
Okay. Our next testifier is Joshua Hodek. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hodek. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Joshua Hodek. I'm here representing the Sierra Club and the Coalition for Clean Transportation. I'll start off thanking you for your hard work this session on an impressive bill that would have benefited all Minnesotans. You've heard over and over this session that our roads are crumbling, our transit system is rated a C-, and the number one climate change polluter in Minnesota is, as you well know, transportation. The conference committee package addresses none of these dire issues. Four states have raised their gas tax this year. Alabama, Arkansas, Ohio, and Virginia. Three of these four states are deeply red. Republicans control both the governor's office and both chambers of the state legislature. They saw the need to invest in transportation and the economic opportunity that would be derived from the investment in crumbling infrastructure and transit. Members, I agree with you. You should be pissed. The public is pissed. Drivers sitting in service stations, waiting rooms while their cars get repaired from hitting potholes are pissed. Stranded transit riders are pissed as they cough and breathe fumes from diesel buses. Our underserved communities are suffering from asthma and other inequities from transportation injustice. They are pissed. And Minnesotans fearing for their own lives and the lives of their families while they're simply trying to cross the street or ride a bike to work are pissed. No doubt about it, this is a lights-on bill. And the lights are dim. It's high time to replace the light bulbs with bright, efficient LEDs. And you can start now with a bonding bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hodek. Ms. Treat, Jessica Treat. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Jessica Treat, and I'm with Move Minnesota. Thanks for the opportunity to speak in front of you all today. So I'm with Move Minnesota. We are a nonprofit transportation advocacy group, and then we also are kind of the lead organization leading Transportation Forward, which is a coalition that's been active at the Capitol for I think the last 3 years now, trying to push for more investment in transit, biking, and walking. And before that, there's been many iterations. The campaign was called Movement in the past. It's been called Transit for, jobs and all the different kinds of things. I've only been here for 3 years. Anyhow, we've been here. We've got a base of over 10,000 individual supporters. We've got over 50 partner organizations, and it's been growing every year. And we hear from people across the state who want options. we're not trying to tell people that they can't drive cars. We're saying we want options, and we want those options for a lot of reasons. We've got a growing senior population, and they need options. My parents are selling their home in Bloomington and looking to move to near Southdale because they want access to transit, and they want to be able to walk to places as they age. People with disabilities, they have very little dignity. They want more investment in transportation options. People who want health for more biking and walking and transit want it. And then access, just for people, low-income people who rely on transit to get to jobs and don't appreciate having to ride 2 hours and four transfers to get to that well-paying job. So there's a lot of desire out there, and this bill, I was very encouraged in 2017 when we got extra money, and so I was very encouraged that this year we'd get more, and I'm really discouraged. Usually I'm the one that's most passionate in the room about transportation, so I really love to hear the passion in my elected officials. Thank you so much for the bill that came out of this committee. It was great. It was very encouraging, and I'm just really disappointed that what we're ending up with, and it's not enough. But yes, the bonding, you still have a chance. Let's get that D-line funded. It is the ABRT are great projects. It's not a ton of money, and it's really moving a lot more people. They're popular. I live on the A line. I take it all the time. So we need to fund more of those. And yes, over the years, your side of the aisle has often said we support buses, but we have not seen that investment coming. So let's get that going with the bonding bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Treat. Our last testifier, and if there are additional testifiers, please let me know. But the last one on the list is Mr. Hollinshead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Matthews Hollinshead. I live in St. Paul in the East Metro in Highland Park. I've been advocating transit for 25 years. I've been riding transit for that long. And I just wanted to be here to say that as an East Metro person, I cannot be in more support of the Southwest Light Rail and the Bottineau Light Rail and the regional build-out of the transitway system. I'm speaking as a transit rider, although I have other hats. The arterial bus is very good. It's excellent. I, too, live on the A-line, and it works so well that I want to be on it even if I have no place to go. But I do want to draw a distinction. The light rail runs on its own track, on its own right-of-way. Arterial bus, as good as it is in mixed traffic. And we do need the basic cross, the extension of the green line, the extension of the blue line, as one of the backbones of our transit system. So I am, I've got fatigue listening to the sort of condescending dismissal of light rail on the part of some at the legislature. I think it's politically motivated. I think they see light rail as serving people who are not part of their party and not part of their constituents. I think that's wrong. I think that's fake government, and I want in the bonding bill, and if not there, maybe next year, maybe after an election that gives us more sympathetic people, I want full build-out and full investment in the transitways, including light rail, bus, arterial, and the local buses that now serve the blocks in between. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Hollinshead. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify on the transportation bill that will be presented in the upcoming special legislative session? Okay. Well, members, we're about to wrap up our committee for the year. Just wanted to address a couple of process issues that were raised earlier by Representatives Torkelson and Elkins. I concur with both of you. I also had some concerns during this last week or so. I think your points are well taken. I would have wanted to have more discussion of the fiscal issues in conference committee. One of the complicating factors on that is that it took longer than we expected for the leaders to reach a fiscal agreement. And, you know, when I had the gavel, I was interested in making sure that we had that discussion. But it was difficult to do that absent an agreement. We did have a few items that we discussed on an informational basis, but you're absolutely right, Representative Torkelson. I think we could have had more conversation about deputy registrars. Your points, Representative Elkins, were also well taken. I appreciated the fact that you did show up at the committee and did personally testify on at least the
dealers'
provisions, and that was valuable, as well as some of the connected and automated vehicle questions. So just wanted to acknowledge your concerns and that I share them. I think especially at the end, things could be done a lot better around here. And I think that's been the case for many, many years. Thought at least our conference committee process and our reviewing the bill before it hits the floor process here is better than in past years. And we've had, I think we're the only committee that's had two hearings on this bill. And I think that as I've heard reports about attendance at other committee hearings the last couple of days in both the House and Senate, I'm very proud again of our committee's attendance level and level of engagement, quite frankly. So I appreciate that from both sides of the aisle. I'm happy to hear any other closing comments that members might have, seeing this is a barring any very unforeseen circumstance, our last meeting at least of this upcoming special session and regular session for this year. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. The hour is getting a little late, so I won't belabor the points, but first off, thanks to all of our staff members, both partisan and nonpartisan. I won't list them, but I think their work throughout the session and especially in these last days has been above and beyond the call of duty, and I appreciate every one of them all across the board. Thanks to the members of the committee. I think we've had a robust discussion of the issues. Many of them will continue into the future, of course, but I believe we've had honest and forthright discussions for the most part, and I think that's really important. And the exchange of ideas here is what we're all about. And I'd especially like to thank you, Mr. Chair, for your leadership of this committee, your hard work, especially in these last week or two. I know how challenging it is to work with the other side of the street, no matter what the party makeup is. It is a challenge.
Thank you for that, Representative.
And it ain't easy. But I would have to chastise you for breaking your own rule on occasion by being funnier than the lead.
Apologize for that, Representative. Any other members have any other final closing remarks or statements? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, and I apologize for following after my favorite lead here. But I do want to say that I've been involved in conference committees over the past few years, and we have been on one that never made it across the goal line as well. And it's always better when we can move forward than have to go backwards. So thank you for your leadership. Thank you for your dedication to transportation. And I always appreciate our full debate in various aspects, even if we don't agree. Thank you.
Thank you, members. Any other discussion? Well, I wanted to also add my thanks to the staff. I think Representative Torkelson nailed it. We have incredible staff on both sides of the aisle and on the nonpartisan basis. As I mentioned earlier, each and every one of you have made really valuable contributions this year in committee. Your active involvement and engagement has been very helpful and appreciated. You know, moving forward, as I said yesterday, this isn't the bill I'd hoped for, and I think there were some potential compromises that were in reach, and I think those compromises involve, you know, using some general fund money. I think Representative Torkelson, that's been established now. I don't think as much as we have currently would be appropriate, but I think in combination with new revenue such as a gas tax and license tap fee, maybe in our future. But I think the real problem and the real challenge with this legislation is that we have not moved forward in meeting the needs, the established needs that have been identified for our road, bridge, and transit system moving into the future are not met in this bill. And my concern about the use of general fund money is that it takes just one economic downturn or one budget cycle where we have a deficit, and that money will be reduced, as will in every division. That's what happens when we have deficits, and we've had deficits as high as $5 billion during the time I've been here. So I worry about that. I feel we need new revenue, and we need new revenue that is sustainable and long-term. And that is not, despite the increase in 2017, that is not sustainable and long-term revenue. So, members, I know we can do better than this bill. I hope we can do better in the future. I look forward to seeing what we can fashion in the coming interim, so that we can get some new revenue on the table. And I do think there are some compromises that might be useful. You know, as recently as even 2015, the then Speaker Dowd had some ideas about increasing license tab fees. Maybe this is the first time I've said this publicly, but, you know, Representative Runbeck has some ideas about a referendum for a sales tax. Maybe that's something we should be looking at in the metro area. I don't know. But there's lots of ideas that aren't in this bill that are worthy of conversation and future discussion, and we will have those in our committee. We may have an interim hearing here and there. I don't anticipate a lot of them, but issues do come up. Certainly with the new registration system, I would anticipate some kind of a interim hearing on that, as well as maybe some other topics. And if you have ideas that you think we ought to discuss between now and next February 11th, please let me know, and we'll certainly be willing to entertain those thoughts. So with that, members, thank you for your participation this year. I don't know when we'll be having our special session, but this bill will be introduced and jacketed and discussed. So you'll have another bite at the apple. Until then, we're adjourned.